everybody. Welcome back. This is Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrik, and the website is redicecreations.com. Today, we're going to go back into the health area. I think it's true that if we don't take care of our body and make an effort to stay healthy in this very unhealthy world of ours, you won't be able to focus on many other issues or fight any of the good fights that we need to be involved in at this time. So I think it's true to say that it is really the number one, or should be the number one, priority. We are going to focus on inflammation specifically today and address the various options that are available to us outside of the pharmaceutical death machine that, with the aid of what they deem to be properly prescribed medication, kills hundreds of thousands of people each year. So our focus is going to be on many of the miracle herbs and plants that are available to us in nature. With us, we have Christopher Vasey from Switzerland to address this particular topic. He is a naturopath and author of The Acid Alkaline Diet for Optimum Health. He's also written The Water Prescription and Optimal Detox. But the book we'll be speaking about today is called Natural Remedies for Inflammation. In 1979, he started his own practice. Alongside his therapeutic work, he continued by studying the works of other famous naturopaths such as Dr. Paul Carton, Herbert Shelton, Robert Masson, and Sebastian Naep. In 1981, he organized his own introductory course to naturopathy and started teaching in various health-oriented associations. From 1988 onwards, his books on natural medicine have been published in many languages in many parts of the world. Christopher Vasey gives lectures regularly in Europe, in the USA, and Canada, and writes for several nature and health-oriented magazines. Well, we have some great tips and suggestions coming up, so stay with us for more. Hi, Christopher. Thank you for taking the time speaking with us today. It's great to have you here.
Well, hello, yeah.
Excellent. Now, you've written a number of books on the issues related to natural health, natural remedies, and of course, how eating the right food can help you to stay healthy, basically. You wrote The Acid Alkaline Diet for Optimal Health a few years ago. You also have another one out called The Water Prescription. I think it's not a big secret that people today are way too dehydrated. And this is something I want to talk more about later with you about. But you have a few other titles out there too, and we certainly can speak more about them too later. But I wanted to begin to speak with you about your latest book that you have out called Natural Remedies for Inflammation. I think this is an important subject, especially today. A lot of people are struggling with these issues without, in some cases, even knowing them. They're running to the doctor way too early in some cases, and they don't realize that there are things that they can do themselves. But first of all, kind of out the gates here, tell us about the inflammation syndrome first and why this occurs and what triggers this in the body.
Well, an inflammation is a defensive reaction triggered by the body. Usually people think that it is the microbe or the poison which is the cause of the inflammation. It is, in a way, but it is not only the destruction of the tissues by the germ, it's the reaction of the body to defend itself against germs or poisons or whatever is coming into the body and destroying the cells. And in order for the cells to defend themselves, the cells cannot defend themselves alone. I mean, those which have been attacked, they must seek the help of the immune system. And in order to do this, they secrete substances which are called pro-inflammatory prostaglandins or mediators, which give the immune system the signal that there's something wrong and that it should react. And the reaction causes the inflammation of the part which is aggressed, attacked. And there are four main symptoms of an inflammation which are known already for a long time. It is that the region becomes red, it swells, it's painful, and it gets very warm. And that there's a reason why there is this redness, swelling, and so forth. The immune system, to defend the attacked cells, will secrete white corpuscles, white blood cells.
Right. Yep.
And in order for these blood cells to come close to the area which is attacked, there must be more blood. So the small capillaries will dilate, and more blood will come in the region, which will make the region red. And then more plasma will come around the cells to facilitate the arrival of the white blood cells. And that's the reason why the region swells. And then the pain is triggered by the attackers or by the prostaglandins themselves in order to give the signal, and it's intensified the defensive system. And all this activity to defend the region which is attacked causes a production of heat, and that's why it's also quite warm in the region. And that's something which can be observed. I mean, if someone has pains in the joints, well, the skin above it can be red, but it's for sure painful. It has swollen, and it's red.
Yeah.
This swollen. Sorry, red, swollen, more pain, and warmer. Yeah, warmer. That was the one I forgot.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the reaction, but then the white cells attack the microbes. They destroy them, and then a signal must be given by the cells that the process is through, it's good, the attackers are destroyed, and you know, because it has to stop once, and the immune system must be informed, and that's why the cells will then produce other mediators, the anti-inflammation mediators. Those are substances which go to the immune system and say, stop defending me because I'm okay. And it's necessary that this takes place because otherwise the immune system will still go on defending the region, sending more white cells, which will attack the germs. But also when the germs are not there anymore, it will attack the cells of the body and destroy them. And this is, of course, not something beneficial. It must be stopped. So when there's an inflammation, there's always two things. First, the signal is given and to defend, and the inflammation is triggered. And then the second signal that now it's okay, it has to calm down, stop defending me, and then the inflammation can disappear.
Yeah.
But this, of course, only takes place when the cells have the microbes have really been distracted.
And that doesn't always occur then, I guess, right? Because this is something that just kind of continue and continue, right?
Yeah, in some cases it just continues and continues, which is bad because, as we've just seen, it can destroy the organic tissues around the place where it was attacked. And also it will give a lot of pain to the person. So the wish to stop these pains and this inflammation arises, and one way of doing it is to use anti-inflammatory remedies.
Yes.
The reason, there are two kinds of those anti-inflammatory remedies. They can be the natural ones, the one I talk about, or they can also be the chemical ones, it is the aspirins and family of remedies, and the cortisone.
Exactly. You have the ibuprofen or whatever it's called, you know, cortisone. Other, you know, anti-inflammatory drugs are like very high up there today in terms of how much they sell and whatnot. But what you know, people use these daily in some cases, other powerful drugs as well. What is the negative side to that and trying to shut down inflammation using these techniques, Christopher?
Well, the bad effects they can give is that, like for cortisone, it will lower the possibility of the immune system to defend itself against the germs which have just attacked, or in general, that is also against cancerous cells. So that's not a good point. It also leads to decalcification of the bones, a water retention, again, in weight, high blood pressure, and so forth. There's a whole list of them. And that, of course, is not something we want. But I think we've got to be clear. When the plants, the natural remedies do not work, it is good to use cortisone, produced in by the industry, or aspirins in when it's really necessary. But up to this point, there are so many illnesses which people can cure themselves with natural remedies, that is, plants which have an anti-inflammatory possibility.
Yeah.
For the aspirin, yeah. the setback is that usually it's the stomach doesn't agree with it so well, and it can give really gastritis or even ulcers when too much of it is taken.
And so, does that vary from person to person, how much you can take or whatnot?
Yes, it depends on, it's like that with everything, with plants also. Some people will tolerate a lot of high quantity or high dosage. In others, not at all, a very low one. It's very different from one person to the other.
Yeah, definitely. Well, obviously, I mean, you go into about 18, I think, anti-inflammatory herbs in the book, and then you have 15 other natural substances listed as well. You know, before we go into talking more about those and how to apply those, what they are, what they help for, etc., is there anything more we should know about the process? I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit, in general, why you think people get different kinds of inflammation today. I mean, is it related to, I guess people call it lifestyle, right? But food choices, not enough exercise, there's medication, etc. A lot of, detrimental ways that people live today, correct?
Yeah. Well, in fact, there are five main causes to inflammation. One is, we've already talked about, it's microbes, germs. They come in the body, they regress, attack the cells, and the body has to defend itself. But the aggression can also come from chemicals or poisons. I mean, if a bee stings you, or if you eat a mushroom which is poisonous, then it will attack, aggress your digestive tube. Or heavy metals by pollution and so forth. All those are noxious substances which will attack the body, and the body has to defend itself. So microbes, chemicals. Also, physical invaders, I mean, splinters or rose thorns or things like that, sea urchins, spices, they all attack the body, and the body has to defend itself. And also, that's more now in relation with the way we live, it's all the toxins which are produced by the body with what we eat. I mean, if someone has too many uric acids, acids in general, these acids are very corrosive and aggressive, and they can trigger an inflammation also.
Yeah.
And the last category is made of all the allergens. I mean, flower pollen or dust or hair of animals and so forth. That's not all everybody, but some people are very sensitive to these allergens and react very strongly. And the reaction is an inflammatory reaction also.
Right. That latter category you mentioned, allergens, I think that's a pretty, isn't that a fairly recent one in terms of how it's kind of become more of an epidemic among a lot of people? I don't think it would, I mean, we know, for example, that if you keep too clean of a household when you grow up, for example, or if the parents does, you can develop, a hypersensitivity to dust and certain things like this, right? So we're kind of detached from the natural environment, which has created a lot of these issues unnecessarily, correct?
Yes, exactly, yeah. When you think of it, many people live in a totally non-natural environment or artificial environment. They live in a house, in a town. They're never in contact with trees or flowers or grass or animals. It's all very sterilized in offices and so forth. When they get into contact with, pollen or things similar, their body is not used to it and overreacts. And one reason why they overreact is also because they're not healthy. I mean, their body is, the internal environment of the body is too saturated with toxins and becomes very hyper-reactive because of all those poison in it, and overreacts also when there's an allergen coming into the body or in contact with the body. So it's something new, because I don't think that centuries before us, people had allergies, or very few. Yeah,
no.
It's really something new.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's what I thought as well. Well, a little bit later here, Christopher, we'll speak a little bit more about, beginning kind of that road towards a more healthy lifestyle. You've written so much about that. I think you have a lot of knowledge there, which is excellent to talk about. But first of all, then, let's get into these different herbs that you talk about, natural substances and whatnot. And I don't know if there are different categories here, different things that they do help with. But let's go through the herbs first here and talk more about those.
Well, some herbs are capable of stimulating our body to produce cortisone. So there's a difference here with taking cortisone, because a doctor will give cortisone to someone. It's cortisone which is produced in a laboratory or extracted in the past from an animal. And the doses which can be given can be very high and have very harmful effects, good effects, but also harmful side effects. But some plants are capable of stimulating our suprarenal glands, which are the glands which produce cortisone, to produce more cortisone. So we're not taking cortisone, we're taking a plant which stimulates the body to produce cortisone, and it will not produce a very high dosages of it. It will just increase the production. So it's very physiological and has no bad side effects.
Let me ask you there before you continue, Christopher. Is that a process which is better to do on a, let's say, a long-term scale? Because obviously the artificial way of taking it is a lot during a short period, but is it better to do produce naturally within your own body, but do it over a longer period of time instead, perhaps?
Yes, when it's possible to do it on a long period, well, that's the way to do it. But sometimes it's really urgent, acute, and there's a need of a very high dosage. And there, well, the plants will probably not be sufficient.
Right. Yeah. So it's an issue by issue kind of case. And it depends on how much people are suffering or what they're suffering from. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In medicine, it's not easy.
No.
Hippocrates, the father of medicine, said it's really difficult. Once you've got to do this, another time you've got to do just the opposite. Depends on who you are trying to heal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What herbs trigger the natural process here of cortisone?
Yeah. Well, the main plants, I've mentioned three, but the main one is black currant buds. It's not the leaves or the fruit, it's the buds. And it's prepared in a glycerin maceration or a mother tincture. That is, the buds are put into alcohol, a mixture of alcohol and water, or alcohol, glycerin, and water. And the active substance come into the preparation, and then it can be used. So it's the drops. The person will take, for example, three times a day, 30 drops of this mixture, mix it with water, and drink it. And the effect is quite quick. In 10 minutes, it can be seen that it is already being active. It's easy to see, for example, with someone who has hay fever. He's sneezing, his eyes are all red and running, and he takes the black currant buds, mother tincture. Well, 10 minutes after, it kind of calms down and disappears if it's not too strong.
Huh.
So this is when it's acute. One intake will help for the moment, but if it's hay fever season, well, the person will take three times a day, or maybe four or five times a day, a dose of this mixture to stimulate his suprarenal glands.
Interesting. So that's something which I guess people actually are selling those as well, right? And is it kind of a homeopathic? No, it's not quite a homeopathic remedy, right? It's just more of
it's in the direction, but it's not quite, no.
Okay, yeah.
But it's sold by everywhere in the United States too. It's very efficient against hay fever, for example, or all allergies. But also if someone has an inflammation of the prostate or cystitis or so forth, it also will work, because all of those inflammatory remedies are anti-inflammatory. So it's a general activity, and it will, of course, act where the problem is. And you will see that it acts where it is. But This said, some plants have better action on some organs than others. But this one is a really universal one. I would suggest people start with that. Blackcurrant, bats in glycerin maceration or mother tincture.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Do you have any recommendations or something like that on your website in terms of where people can turn to find some of these products?
No, because as I live in Switzerland, I don't know too well what are the firms which produce such plants.
Sure, sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I thought if you checked online or something like that, but definitely we can. That's a good tip though that people can search for nonetheless. But yeah, let's keep on moving in that list. It's interesting that different herbs and different things actually target different things in your body as well. I don't know quite how that works, but it's there for us to utilize, which is pretty interesting, right?
Yeah. I think the reason is that there are anti-inflammatory substances in the plants, but it's also surrounded by many other substances which have other effects and which are maybe very favorable for one organ and not really active on others. So there's an affinity between a plant and certain organs in the body.
Right. Yeah. So let's move on in that list a little bit. We talked about blackcurrant, obviously the buds there. What more would you recommend there?
Well, in the cortisone stimulators, there's also the scotch pine, which is well known to stimulate the cortisone production, and black spruce. But I would stay with blackcurrant for the beginning.
Right, yeah.
That would be best, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there are other plants which have... will not stimulate the cortisone production, but which will block the pro-inflammatory mediators. So as we've seen just before, the cells will produce prostaglandins to give the message to the immune system, and these plants will block the message so that the immune system stops receiving the information that there is. It has to defend the body. And therefore, it will not send any white cells anymore. And that will calm the inflammation and then stop it.
Right.
So there are many different plants which are possible. Well, one which is very well known is Devil's Claw, or Arpagophytum in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a root from Africa, which is... very good, which is used usually in capsules, and it's really very powerful, and it's mostly used for joints problems, so for arthritis, all the different kinds of rheumatism, and tendinitis, lumbago, and so forth. Some researchers have shown that it's just as powerful as aspirins or similar remedies.
Interesting, yeah.
So the person will take, for example, if it's in capsules, 3 times a day, 2 capsules, or maybe 3 times 3 capsules if the person needs more. And after 1-2 days, well, the effect starts to be felt by the person. The pains are not so big. It's kind of slowed down, soothed, and, well, more or less depend on the situation.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to introduce just a remark. These remedies are fighting the symptoms of the illness, but they're not fighting against the cause of the illness. And in natural medicine, the basic nature of all illnesses is considered to be an accumulation of toxins and poison in the body. And basically what a naturopath does is, if someone has a joint problem or any kind of illness, he will detoxicate the person in order to get rid of a lot of toxins, that many toxins come out of the body, and therefore the illness becomes less and less. The person becomes more healthy and healthy. But the inflammatory organs do not do that, but they are useful in conjunction, in addition to the cleansing of the body, detoxification.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean that's that can be long and in some cases a gruesome process for people to go on a detox, because it just might be so much bad stuff basically locked up in the body. But it's important that it's done right. We've talked with other guests on the program about this as well. But if you, for example, begin to take certain things that begin the detox process, it's important that you take things that also help you to flush those out of the body and things like that. But what can you say more about detox if this kind of is a step one? You've written about this, so it's a long subject in itself, and people can go for your book for more material. But give us an overview of that.
I wrote about it in my book, Optimal Detox. The idea is that basically, and it's, I demonstrate that in the book, that all the illnesses are due to an excess of toxin in the body. This toxin can be eliminated by the excretory organs, which are the liver, the intestines, the kidneys, the skin, and the lungs. And usually these excretory organs are weak or work too slowly or are overcome by all the toxins which are in the body because we eat too much and so forth. And therefore they cannot eliminate everything. So there are different ways of stimulating these organs with plants, hydrotherapy, and so forth, to make them work much more intensely so that they work well again and even more than normal for a certain time in order to get rid of many, many toxins. And the more toxins come out of the body, the healthier the person becomes.
Yeah.
And it is a condition in order to be healthy again. If someone has arthritis, for example, or any other illness, he has to pass through detoxification in order to cure itself. He can take many different kind of remedies. It will only make the symptoms disappear, but not the cause, which is the body, which is full of toxins. So it's something very important in natural medicine.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. And again, there's a lot of things to, set you off in that path in terms of, natural ways to detox as well, from things like dandelion, which you can do as a tea and whatnot, to, I know some people have talked about zeolite. Actually, it's a kind of a volcanic shock. I don't know how to describe it quite, but it seems like a pretty interesting things that allegedly lock up some of the toxins in its kind of hectagonal shape or whatnot. Have you heard about zeolite?
Well, it's like a clay, a bit. It absorbs the toxins and they are flushed away with when the intestine empties itself. I think that's what you're talking about.
That's right.
Usually But the main way of detoxifying is taking plants like, as you said, dandelion, which stimulate the liver, but there are others which stimulate the kidneys, or sweating in sauna or in different by exercising to get rid of toxins through the skin by sweat and so forth and so on. So there are many different ways of doing it. Yeah,
absolutely.
And also with a bit of diet, if you eat less or if you eat only for a few days only fruits and vegetables, then the intake of food is much lower. And of toxins also, because toxins come mainly from meats, proteins, cereals, and so forth, grease, fats, when the person eats too much of them. And therefore, diet is also a good way of helping to detoxify.
Yeah, let me ask you about that a little bit more, because I think it's interesting. Every time I've watched animals, when they get sick, they basically never eat anything. They just stop everything and they rest and they go on a fasting period. And that's something that we're not quite accustomed to do as humans. We're accustomed to having food all the time, right? So how does fasting help to clean the body?
Well, when someone fasts or an animal fasts, he doesn't receive any food anymore. But his body needs proteins, vitamins, minerals to go on working. And if he is not receiving them from an external source, he must find them inside the body. And he triggers a process which is called autolysis. This is digestive process of the tissues. And this digestive process will attack first, and that's very fortunate, first the things which the body doesn't need, that is, to make things simple, toxins. So the toxins will be digested, what's still useful in them, I mean, an amino acid or vitamin will be recycled, the body will use it, and the other part will be destroyed and eliminated. And the longer the fast, well, the more the body has to go deeper and burn more of the waste products and toxins, which has, as a result, at the end of the fast, that the body has been cleansed of many toxins which have been burned during the fast. That's the natural way of doing it, one of the natural way of getting rid of toxins. And as you say, animals use it spontaneously. We human beings know about it. Some do it, some don't.
Yeah.
It depends, yeah.
That's right, exactly. Now, one thing I like with your book, Natural Remedies for Inflammation, is that you list a lot of the things that we've been talking about so far pretty, you know, in a very easy way, a straightforward kind of way of breaking down the different things that you can take, how they work, and, you know, how they, you know, work in the body and whatnot. And another thing that's really important here that you write about that we can talk more about is basic omega-3s and the anti-inflammatory effect of these. And there's a number of, things that you actually just can eat as opposed to taking the supplements. But I can ask about the supplements later. But what do you recommend there? And why is omega-3 such an important factor in this?
Because the plants we've just talked about, the remedies we've just talked about, they had substances in them which blocked the signal that there was an inflammation. But as we have seen, when there's an inflammation, after a while, the body, the cells should send a message that the inflammation should stop. And to do this, they produce anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. And that gives the signal to the immune system to stop reacting. But to produce these anti-inflammatory prostaglandins, the body must have omega-3s. And that's the whole problem. If it doesn't have enough omega-3s, well, the signal will not be given. It's the same situation as if someone has to call to help and write a message on a piece of paper to send the information, but there's no paper around, so he cannot send the information. So, and the reason why we don't have enough omega-3 is because of the way we eat. Omega-3s was called in the past vitamin F. It's a fatty acid, which is found in oils, for example, which are cold pressed, not heated, but cold pressed, first pressure, and so forth, which are still alive. But nowadays, most people use oils which are very heated in order to get more oil. I mean, no, the olives, for example, or the grains are heated in order to extract more oil. And this destroys the omega-3s. So that's why it's so important to eat oils which are cold-pressed.
Yeah.
Because then the omega-3s have not been destroyed. But nowadays, it's not the case. And as these omega-3s are not given to the body, well, it cannot produce anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. And that's why there's a general tendency to always be a bit in an inflammatory state, or when it starts, not to be able to stop it. We should have 2 grams of omega-3 a day, that has been calculated. And in fact, we only get 0.2 or 0.6 gram per day if we eat like just anybody else. That's only 10% or 30% of our daily needs.
Right, yeah.
So when a person like that doesn't receive, has an inflammation, his body has a lot of trouble stopping it because there's not enough omega-3 at its disposal. And therefore, then in my book, I list the oils which are very rich in omega-3s, and they are not the ones which we usually eat or use. I mean, I could go through the list.
Sure. Let's talk about some of that. Obviously, we know about, fish, and some people do, fish oil separately in capsules and whatnot. Is that a good idea, do you think? Can you get too much omega-3, or is that all right?
No, that's all right. In fact, there are 2 different sources, the plant source and the animal source.
Yeah.
The plant source is mostly in the oils, like perilla oils. It has a 65% of the oil is omega-3. But of course, it's quite expensive. You can't eat too much of it.
can you spell that? Can you spell that for us? How do you spell that?
Perilla.
Okay, perilla. That's right. Okay.
Perilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also flax seeds. 54% of flax seeds oil is omega-3. Or camelina. It's not well known, but hemp is well known. Hemp oil.
Yeah.
17% to 19%. So if you smoke marijuana, it doesn't work, but you've got to take the hemp oil.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or walnut oil, which is also good, 12%, nearly 13%. Or canola.
Yeah, canola. Canola nine, oil. Yeah.
Yeah, 9%. Soya, 7%. So those are the ones. It doesn't mean someone must not use any more sunflower oil or olive oil. It would be better to switch to these oils as a part of his intake of oil to get enough of these omega-3s. In my book, I give exactly how much of each of these oils should be taken each day in order to have enough omega-3s.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of these things are things you can, you know, throw on your food. A lot of these seeds, for example, like the hemp seeds or even the flax seeds, if they're specific, if it's flax, sure, you have to ground them up or whatnot. But this is something you can just eat on the side with your food, right? Dinner.
Yeah, exactly. You can just add them to salads or any food, and it will, you masticate them, so the omega-3s will be liberated and the body will be able to use them. Yeah.
Yeah. What about some of the fish oils and whatnot out there? Obviously, as you say, you can just eat the fish straight up. That's fine. I know that some people are really, kind of anxious about the mercury levels in fish. But some of those you list are, some of them anyway, are the smaller fish, which is better to go for, correct?
Yeah. Well, that's a problem, huh? The pollution of the sea, water, and so forth. But everybody has made the effort to find the less polluted fishes, and it's possible up to a certain point. Organic fishes, you can find here and there, so it's possible.
Yeah.
So as you say, we can eat those fishes, and that's why we hear more and more that it is recommended to eat more fish than meat. Because in those fishes, like mackerel, salmon, herring, rainbow trout, and so forth, if you eat something like between 80 and 200 grams, depending on the fish, you've got enough omega-3 for the day. So that's one way of doing it. Some people don't like fish, or they want more omega-3, then they take capsules of oil, which are dosed usually 300 milligrams. So by taking 3 times 2 capsules, they have enough omega-3s for the day.
Yeah.
If someone is very ill, then he will have to take more. But in my book, I give the general standard dose.
Yep, that's right. Now, what do you stand on the low-fat versus high-fat issue as well? Because obviously we're in this time now where the low-fat craze is the latest hype, and again, it's due to one of these things. We're not getting enough of the good types of fats in our diet, and hence this is creating a lot of problems for people as well, right?
Yeah. Well, the bad fats have their action is to destroy omega-3, should we say, and increase the need of omega-3. So that's why someone who would eat a lot of meat, fats full of fat, or with a lot of fat, is working against the production of omega-3s. And the reaction to this is eat more fish. That's what you can hear in all the news, radios and newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for this is that fish is, okay, it gives proteins and all, but when you eat too much of them, there's the omega-3 decreases, and that's bad.
Yeah.
So some people will go on eating meat, but then if someone does that, he must too much meat, he will have to take many capsules of omega-3s, and it's not really the good way to do it. It's better to eat less meat, more fish, take capsules of fish oil or plants, vegetable oils like flax oil and so forth. and or puts it in the food to get again enough omega-3 in the body.
Yeah, definitely. Let's run through some of the other things that you do list here. Obviously, we talked about black currant and spruce and whatnot, and Scotch pine. These are very, you know, and but even there's more common things like basil, right?
There are other plants which are very useful. I think like lavender in essential oil.
Yeah,
is not the most powerful anti-inflammatory plant, but its action is very soft. It's something you can put the essential oil directly on the skin, and it will not be aggressive at all. And it can be used for all the different kind of illnesses, with children, with old people. It's a universal anti-inflammatory. If someone has been stung by a bee or has a scratch or joint problems or an inflammation of the eyes, well, not put the essential oil in the eyes, but around it and so forth, it will always help. That's a useful one. There's also the wintergreen, which is quite interesting because it's usually used as essential oil, and it has a smell which is very strong and which smells of aspirin.
Oh, really?
Because aspirin is the same thing with meadow sweet, which is another anti-inflammatory plant. If you take the plant, you will see it smells a lot of aspirin. But it's not that the plant has copied the aspirin, it's the other way around. The plants were discovered as having a good effect against pain in the joints, inflammation of the joints, and so forth, already by the Greek in antiquity. And it's only in the 19th century that, with the development of chemistry, that they found out which was the substance which was active.
Yeah.
And they extracted it and then produced it in a laboratory and made aspirin with it.
Yeah.
And this typical smell is of aspirin. You can also smell in different plants which are rich in these anti-inflammatory substances. And it's the case with wintergreen. 95% of the essential oil is made of this substance, and which is methyl salicylate. I'm pronouncing it maybe in the French way.
Right.
And it has this smell of aspirin. And this is used mostly for joint problems or tendinitis or neuritis and so forth. It's not swallowed, it's more applicated on the body.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. This is how they do it, of course. They find the active ingredients, synthesize that, or they extract it in some way, and then they put that trademark on it and package it and sell it. While you can, you know, just get it in nature. And let's talk about some of the other ones you list here. Turmeric is another big one, obviously.
Turmeric, yeah. It's well known. It's a root which enters in the composition of kauri. It has an orangey color. And this is also anti-inflammatory, but mostly for the digestive tube, for if someone has gastritis or enteritis or colitis and so forth. It can be added to the food. It can be taken in tea or mother tincture or capsules, and it will calm the inflammation of the digestive tube. But also, it will act on joint problems or skin or different things. As I said before, every of these plants have a general action, but they're more effective on one organ than the other.
Yeah, yeah. I heard turmeric can help you with your memory as well. I don't know if that's true or not, but turmeric seems to have a lot of positive effects to it.
Yes, yeah. Well, I didn't know about that, but maybe it's true. Yeah, I don't know.
Now,
let's hope so.
How?
Or maybe I forgot. Maybe
yeah,
I forgot.
Exactly. That's right. You got to go hit that right away. But how do we approach the subject of dosage and whatnot here, and how much and whatnot? You write about that in the book too, right?
Yeah. Well, when it's an essential oil, it's usually one, two, three drops, three times a day, depends on the essential oil, not more, because it's very concentrated. In my book, I give for each plant the dosage to be sure that people start with the correct dosage, which can be, which will be good for most people, maybe a bit too high for others, and they can go down, or not enough, and they can increase. One has to test a bit the reactions.
Yeah, exactly.
And well, I've talked about the matter tincture of black currant further on. Well, it's usually 3 times 30 to 50 drops. So start with 3 times 30. If the effect is good, then it can be that, stay that way. Or it can be increased to 3 times 40 or 50 or even a bit more. Depends on the person. Some people react very quickly, some not so quickly. So one has to find the dosage.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very important. Let's see, what's another couple of items here as well I wanted to ask you more about. One thing that surprised me, being from Sweden and all that, but we have an abundance of birch trees, but we've heard for a long time that that's been used for a lot of different things and tea and things like that. So how do you go about using the birch? Is it the leaf or the bark, or what do you do there?
It's the leaf, yeah.
Yeah.
Birch has been used for a long time to stimulate the kidneys, so that the kidneys eliminate all the acids, uric acid, urea, and so forth, for people with joint problems, arthritis, and so forth, and also skin problems. But the other quality of this plant is that it will lower the histaminic, the histamines in the body. Here we are entering in the plants which are specifically good for allergies. Not only these plants, but also specifically for, because as we've seen, black currants is very good against allergies, but these plants that we're going to talk about are specific against histamine. When one of the mediators, the cells secrete to tell the immune system that it must defend them, is histamine. And so histamine triggers the reaction of inflammation, and specifically in allergies. So, and when someone is allergic, he usually has a level of histamine which is higher in the cells and the blood than most people, than average.
Yeah.
And therefore, a very small increase will trigger the allergic reaction. So the idea is to lower this histaminic level, so in order to become more normal and not be so hyperreactive against allergens. And there are different plants which can do it, and one is the birch leaves. Usually it can be teas, of course, it can be also mother tinctures. And with following a cure for 2-3 months, then the result will come, the person will be less allergic. But I think the most powerful one is black cumin seeds, Nigella sativa. And the interesting thing is that it will, well, lower the histamine level, but also it's quite useful for people who have headaches and migraines, because these conditions are triggered by a too high level of histamine in some people. So by just reducing this level, the people can get rid of their migraine or headaches. But some people, it's like that with every plant, doesn't work so well on everybody, but it's very effective on many people. So black cumin seeds.
Black cumin seeds,
In mother tincture. 3 times 30 drops a day with a little water before the meals. And after 2 months, many people see they get rid of their headaches, migraines. But it's also the people who will have a hay fever will feel that it's not so strong anymore. It's getting better.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard, we're going to take a break here in a little bit, but we can talk about one other one before we talk more about the books and your website and whatnot. But I've heard for many years that if you take raw honey, for example, that is something that aids the process of you know, with pollen allergies and things like this. Now, you write about, is it propolis it's called, or propolis?
Propolis, yeah.
Propolis, yeah.
That's it's a resinous, gummy substance which is produced by the bees, which is used in the beehive for the walls and different things. And it has the possibility, or the action of being anti-inflammatory. It's a very good product. It's possible to buy some paste, chewable paste, and by chewing it, it will, in the mouth, it will, disinfect, because it's also a disinfectant, but it also calms the inflammation of the mouth, so any kind of inflammation at that level, such as gingivitis or glossitis and so forth, or canker sores. And but then it's swallowed, it goes into the stomach, and then it's good against gastritis and low down enteritis, colitis, and so forth. It's not a plant, it's the exception. It's an animal product, but it's really very good. It can also be used in powder or mother tinctures.
Yeah, definitely. Now, this is very useful information, I think, for obviously a number of reasons who don't want to be healthy, but also this aspect that we should be, a preventative measure. We can help to combat those medical bills that might come, later in life and all that kind of stuff, right? And this is a way to do it. It's to use what is in the natural world already. And the very aspect that I think a lot of this knowledge has been, in existence for a long time, and the fact that we've kind of replaced this way of thinking with, chemical application, prescription medicines, and all this kind of approach, which is, fairly recent. And I think trusting and relying on something that comes out of nature is something which is, if you think about it, much, much, much wiser. And it's something that has obviously lasted for a longer time. And we see a lot of side effects from the medications and whatnot. I think there's still, we mentioned this a couple of times on the show before, but I think it's like something like 150,000 deaths from properly prescribed medication each year, for example. And these are major aspects that no one really is talking about, And this information that you're sharing here, Christopher, is very important and very useful as well. Why don't we talk a little bit more about your website and give out some of the titles of some of the other books that you have to our audience as well, and tell us where people can pick up copies of your books.
Yeah. Well, my website is address is www.christophervasey. In one word, Vasey is Vasey.ch. And on my website, I present my different books. There's a picture of the book, a number of pages, and so forth. A short summary, all the different chapters, and also then an article or two on the subjects. It can be an article or an excerpt of the book. So the people can have a good idea of what is the content of the book. So the book we're talking about is Natural Remedies for Inflammation. With all my books are in a tradition. They can be ordered, bought on their website, but on many other websites and in bookshops. So about the books, Natural Remedies for Inflammation is the newest. Before that, I wrote two books on detoxifying. One is Optimal Detox, How to Cleanse Your Body of Colloidal and Crystalline Toxins. It explains why we are ill because of the toxins, why the toxins are the reason why we are ill. It talks of how the different excretory organs function, that is the liver, kidneys, intestines, skin, lungs, how they work, and how it is possible for us to stimulate them ourselves with plants, hydrotherapy, fruit juices, vegetable juices, and massage, and so forth. It's a practical guide. There are many practical things to do, and things which people can do on their own without a therapist or on their own. Of course, if it's a bit too complicated, related illness, they should go to a therapist, but otherwise they can do it on their own. And there's a second book on detox. It's the Detox Mono Diet. It's the miracle grape cure and other cleansing diets. It explains that when we were talking about fast just before, it explained that when we do a mono diet, this is a diet where we only eat one kind of food, we are putting ourselves in the same situation as a fast. The body is lacking nutrients, and it starts to digest its own tissues, starting with the toxins, which leads to the cleansing of the body, the elimination, burning and elimination of many toxins. So it's all also very practical. It's only on diets. It's not plants, as in the first book, Optimal Detox.
Yeah. You have the water prescription as well. This is one I want to ask you about more later in the second segment, but you can tell us more about that a little bit if you want to.
Well, the water prescription is talks about the necessity to drink enough water. It's the quantitative aspect of water. Many people don't drink enough, and they are dehydrated, or not too badly, but a bit. And then the body works less and less well because of that, because a lot depends on water. So I explain what happens with water when it comes in the body, how it goes deeper and deeper, how it is eliminated, how much should come back in the body, and different ways of remembering to drink enough and so forth, to be very practical. Many people who have read it said, now I understand why I need to drink more water, because I've always heard it is good, but I wasn't very motivated. But now I know why, I understand, I can picture it. I'm very motivated, and they start drinking enough water, and they very soon see that they have more energy, joy of life, because a lot of the body functions depend on water.
Yeah, indeed. You have about 8 books in total on the website on health issues in particular, and I recommend that people go over there and take a look at the titles, and not only those we've mentioned here so far. The website here again is christophervasey.ch. We're going to have that linked up, and also check out the publisher innertraditions.com for more on that. Christopher, we'll take a short break here. Stay with us, and we'll be right back with more. We'll proceed in the second hour to talk more about natural remedies towards dealing with various kinds of inflammation. We'll also talk about dealing with stress and the importance of detoxing from zeolite and dandelion tea to saunas. This can be as important as eating right. We also discussed the importance of hydration and how water, both hot but particularly cold, can help with inflammation. I'll also ask Christopher more about the acid alkaline diet as well. And we will continue at redicemembers.com for another hour with Dr. Vasey. So go there to sign up and tune in if you're not already a member. We have more coming up with Marion Van Court, Robert Ferguson, Colin Liddell, and Andy Nowicki, Joaquin Flores, John Lash, Dennis Fetcho, and Jeff Gates, to name a few. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. We'll talk to you on the other side of the break.